Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Bo. This week, Rabbi David Levenkreus discusses Bo. Rabbi David Levenkreus is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Director of Special Projects. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreus.
Thank you, Larry. I don't know about you, but for me, the moment Tu B'Shvat, which is next week, comes around, I'm already in Pesach mode. Only 2 months to Pesach. Let's start cleaning. Let's start thinking about the Seder. Let's start planning what we're going to do. And thus, for me, it isn't particularly strange that we're reading about Moshe and the Exodus, because that's exactly where my mind is at the moment. So today we're going to look a little bit at Pesach and at the first Seder. And I'd like to start off by reading something written by a student of mine, Brian Fink, about Pesach and the Seder. And we'll use that as a basis to try and understand what the first Pesach was like and how that is relevant to us today. He writes, "Pesach is my favorite Jewish holiday. It's got it all. Food, family, and great content. It's the ultimate Jewish social justice holiday. In fact, many things that I know from life, I learned from Passover. All who are hungry should enter and eat. Every person should see themselves and then be seen by others as if he, or she, in my version of the Haggadah, had personally come out of Egypt. It's important to ask questions. 4 is never enough. In business, diversification is key. Bonus points if it's good for the Jews. Why else would a coffee company, Maxwell House, continuously publish Haggadot since 1933? 1 goat is worth 2 zuzim, very useful for Talmud. There are multiple types of slavery, including physical, emotional, and spiritual. Slavery still exists in our world today. My grandma makes the best matzo ball soup. You could argue with me, but then you'd be wrong. Rabbi Jose lived in the Galilee, at least according to how his name is spelt in the Maxwell House Haggadah. Don't celebrate the downfall of your enemies. There are way too many products with high fructose corn syrup. Remember to be thankful, Dayenu. Pay attention to the springtime and the cycles of nature. Manischewitz is not real wine. You may really like the social justice Passover supplements from Tikkun magazine, but your family may not. My father was a wandering Aramean. Kitniot, no one's really sure what they are and why they're prohibited, but Ashkenazi Jews make sure not to eat them, except in Israel where it's apparently okay. The number of dishes that you can make with matzah meal, matzah falafel, and matzah cake meal is only limited by your imagination. Sometimes it's important to taste the bitterness of oppression. Matzah pizza is surprisingly not that bad. I know somebody who enjoys his with pepperoni. Playing games is fun. You're never too old to search for the afikoman. Remember to hope. A better world is always possible. God is on the side of freedom, not oppression. There are 13 attributes of God, 12 tribes, 11 stars, 10 commandments, 9 months of pregnancy, 8 days until the bris, 7 days of the week, 6 books of the Mishnah, 5 books of the Torah, 4 mothers, 3 fathers, 2 tablets, and 1 God. It's never too late in the Seder to open the door for Elijah. I don't know about you, but I absolutely love hearing this and reading this, and it echoes with me many, many things that are true for my Seder, and I'm sure this is true for many of our listeners too. But when I do look at this list, I ask myself how much of this is a product of contemporary culture, of halakha, of rabbinic Judaism, and how much of it is really connected to what happened at the first Seder in the Torah. Have we just overlaid something upon what originally was? Or in some ways, do our seders so different from the first seder that took place in Egypt? Does our seder in some way reflect those same values? We read in this week's parsha, Bo, in Shmot 12:11, about eating the first Pesach lamb, which again, as I said before, was eaten in Egypt. V'tekacha tochlu oto, this is how you'll eat it. Motnechem chagurim, your loins girdled, nalechem beraglechem, your sandals on your feet, umekalchem beyadchem, and your staff in your hand, v'achaltem oto bechipazon, and you shall eat it hurriedly, Pesach hu l'Adonai. It is a Pesach offering to God. Clearly, it's something that has to be eaten hurriedly. Not only the word chipazon tells us that, but loins girdled, sandals on your feet, and staff in your hand is clearly the dress of somebody who needs to get somewhere quickly. And it makes sense. The Am Yisrael wanted to leave Egypt as quickly as they can. They'd had enough. And yet, according to many, many commentators, even those who very much emphasize the pshat, the plain, the contextual meaning of the Torah, they were not expecting to leave any moment. They knew they were going to leave the next day. Shmot 12:41 tells us, V'yeh miketz shloshim shana v'arba amot shana, at the end of 430 years, V'yeh be'etzem hayom hazeh, it means in the very day, the basics of the day, which many commentators say that was the day itself in broad daylight. Yatzotzu kol tzva'ot Adonai me'eretz Mitzrayim. All God's army, all God's host left Israel. Why is it so hurried if they're only going to leave in the day? Rashi says it's lashon behala umhirut, the language of confused fear and speed. They don't know what's going on. Remember, they're doing something very, very frightening. They're eating the god of the Egyptians. The fear might not be because, the hurriedness might not be because they're leaving the next day, but they want to do things as quickly as possible. They really are doing an act of ultimate chutzpah, of ultimate rejection, of eating the god, of blaspheming the god of the culture that they're in. And it reminds me very, very much of Jews, perhaps in the time of the Inquisition, or in other eras where it was forbidden to practice Judaism, who would do rituals very, very quickly, very, very quietly. Soviet Russia, do rituals very, very quietly, very, very quickly. So Rashi sees it as fear. Ibn Ezra says, V'tam b'chipazon, and the reason for the hurry, shelo yitagvu v'yimaru la'achlu, that they should not be tarried, and they should hurry to eat it up, lifnei bo rega hamishchit sheyivsak Hashem al hapetach, to eat it before the moment of slaughter, hamashchit, not hamishchit, hamashchit, to eat before the moment of slaughter when God will pass over the entrance. He sees it more as any minute now, God is going to pass over the entrance, kill the firstborn, and we better eat it quickly, so that God is not going to slaughter us too. We have the idea that they're frightened because they're killing the Egyptian god. They have the idea that you have to do it quickly so that God won't slaughter us. But I would like to go with the first reading and say, ask ourselves, even if they were only leaving the next day, why may they eat it? Why may they be eating it hurriedly? And why does the clothing have to be as if they're going on a journey? If it's just for the reasons that Rashi and the Ibn Ezra say, you could eat it quickly, but you wouldn't have to be ready for a journey. The loins, as we said, were girded. These are robes that were worn by people and fastened when proceeding on a journey. The sandals were on their feet. They are ready for travel, as shoes are generally not worn in the house. And their staff is in the hand, in the Ibn Ezra's word, Umekalchem beyadchem linhog achaburim, your staff was in your hand to drive the donkeys. When one's going on a journey, one dresses and is ready to go for the journey. Why are they dressed for a journey? And in fact, it's very interesting that there's some Jews from Arab lands who still do this at their Seder. I think something else is going on over here. I think that this is a tremendous drama of enacting what is about to be. They're bringing to consciousness that they're hoping to leave. There's a wonderful story that I think expresses this very, very beautifully about a man, a pious chassid, who every year would go to his Rebbe and ask his Rebbe for a bracha to have a child. And every year, the Rebbe would give him the bracha, and every year the man would return, not without his wife having had a child. One year, he goes, when he's staying at the regular inn that he stays at every time, the hotel owner says to him, "You know, why do you come past here every year?" And the man tells him that he's about to see his Rebbe to have a baby. And the innkeeper says, "You know, that's very, very interesting. I also am suffering from infertility. And I think I'm also going to go with to see your Rebbe." And the chassid says, "Fine." And to his astonishment, the next day, he sees the man's wife walking around with a baby carriage, saying, "I'm going to have a baby. I'm going to have a baby." There's no baby in the carriage. There's something, I think, almost grotesque about it. But she's wandering around with a baby carriage. Both of them go to the Rebbe. The Rebbe gives them a bracha. Next year comes, and the man is again going, the chassid is again going to see his Rebbe. And lo and behold, he gets to the inn, and he sees that the innkeeper has a baby, and that very carriage that was empty last year has now got a lovely little three-month-old baby in it. When he gets to the Rebbe, he's very upset, and he says to him, Rebbe, please explain to me. I'm a pious chassid. I come every year. I'm devoted to you. I really want to have a child, and yet this other man whom you hardly know, he gets a child." And the Rebbe looks at him and he says, "Listen, sir," he said, "the big difference is that that man's wife went out and bought a baby carriage. That couple not only asked for a bracha, but did something about it and had the faith that good things will come." And this is what the first Seder in Egypt was. It was enacting what was about to come. It was saying, "Here, God, we're ready. We're ready to go any minute. Just help us, give us the last step, and we're going to go there." It was putting themselves in a position that God could do them good things. And when I think of this, echoes in my mind not only Inquisition, not only Soviet Jewry, but the poignant, heartbreaking stories we read about Pesach Seders in concentration camps, where Jews were so much saying to God, "God, put us in a position where we can be redeemed." But I think it's even more than that. And here I'm quoting another student who I actually don't know who it is. She came to visit my class once. She was studying at Oxford University in England. And she said that if we look at the three items that the people had, the shoes, the loins, and the staff, we have symbols of the past, present, and future. The shoes are the symbol of Am Yisrael's past when they were slaves. Shoes are a sign of able to work. If I have shoes, can work. Especially in ancient times, your sandalim were extremely important because if you had sandals, you could go out and work. So the shoes are the symbol of their slave past. The loins, the girded loins, are the symbol of their presence, of a people about to go on a journey. And finally, the staff, which Ibn Ezra tells us is to drive the donkeys. A staff is also the sign of leadership. A shepherd has a staff, and the shepherd is often the leader. The staff is the sign of I'm going to be in charge of my own destiny. I'm going to be able to make decisions. I'm going to be able to not only follow, but also lead. And so the first Seder was not only putting oneself in a position that God could do something good, but it was a celebration of one's future, a recognition of one's presence, and a memorial of our past. And that is what our Seder is today. We think of the past and we speak about our slavery. We look at who we are now and hopefully vow to be better people and to bring about a better world. And we look to the future and pray for the hope and for God to give us the help that God can do it. We have freedom and slavery in one meal like the first Seder. We have past, present, and future in the same meal, just as we had with the very, very first Seder that Am Yisrael ever had. And perhaps there could be no more fitting way for me to complete this shiur than to quote the last line of my student's list of what he loves about Pesach. He wrote, "And for some of us, it's finally going to be this year in Jerusalem. Ken Yehi Ratzon, Shabbat Shalom, and a very early Pesach Sameach."
Thank you, Rabbi Levin Cruz. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.